Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck, live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. You know it, it's Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Happy New Year to all of our Bulls listeners. And Matt, Happy New Year to you as well. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jordan. Happy New Year. I mean, it's I feel like it's a Arctic tundra in Chicago right now. My phone is telling me that it is currently 6 degrees Fahrenheit, which is warmer than this morning when I took out the trash and it was -4.
Oh.
So I guess we're moving in the right direction. But yeah, I had a nice New Year's Eve, a quiet New Year's Eve. My roommates and I just had some of our close friends over. We cooked dinner. We had a few drinks, but we stayed inside, away from all that craziness, away from the frozen temperatures. And yeah, excited to keep Locked On Bulls rolling here in 2018.
Yeah, if you were an idiot like I was and decided to go out on New Year's Eve, especially in the city, it was at one point, I think around 10 o'clock on New Year's Eve, 10 o'clock at night, it was like -30 with the wind chill. And by God, it was brutal out there. And I feel like this has been such a flip in weather too. We went from like mild 40s to 30s all the way into like mid-December, and then all of a sudden there was this flip that was switched, and now we're in the frozen tundra of what we're used to in Chicago. But thank God the Bulls play inside, so if you're at least going to Bulls games, you get to be in the warm comfort of the United Center watching guys like Nico Mirotic and Bobby Portis light it up. But there was plenty of games over the course of this holiday weekend. Leading into the new year, the Bulls played the Pacers, the Wizards on New Year's Eve, and then on New Year's Day, they played the Trailblazers at home. So we want to kind of dive into these three games, and there's plenty of stuff to talk about here in these three games. I want to start it off right away with the Trailblazers game, though, Matt. We can kind of work our way backwards. So there was a couple things that I did see towards the end of this game. While the Bulls were playing up against the Trailblazer team that was playing without Damian Lillard, it was still kind of an uphill battle for this Bulls team. And they sent this game all the way into overtime, ended up losing this game to the Trailblazers. But the one thing that irritated me, I think, the most, and if you were watching this game at all, was what the refs were giving Yusuf Nurkic. They were giving him such a long leash to do basically anything within the last 5 minutes, and then into overtime too. He was mauling guys on the Bulls left and right. He was getting away with calls. I'm pretty sure they teed Chris Dunn up too at the end of the game, and that wasn't supposed to be on Chris Dunn. It was supposed to be somebody on the Trailblazers. Officiating overall in this Trailblazers Bulls game was not very good to start the year.
Yeah, it was a rough one. I think maybe the Bulls got the short end of the stick a couple of times, but you mentioned the free will and reckless abandon of Yusuf Nurkic. And that was something that Hoiberg talked about after the game, because, you know, he was questioned as to why for the back half of the fourth quarter and really all of overtime, Bobby Portis and Nico Mirotic, the new like Bulls Bash Brothers duo of efficiency and success, were nowhere to be seen. They weren't on the floor after having strong games. Nico had 18, Portis 14. With a double-double, 10 boards as well for Nico. And Hoiberg said, look, Nurkic was crushing us. We were trying desperately to keep him off the boards, keep him off the glass. And, you know, I thought it was important to keep Robin Lopez in there, you know, our biggest, toughest body, to bang down low with Nurkic. And I mean, even that, like, you know, Lopez was struggling too. And it's interesting that that's definitely felt like a big factor in this game. And, of course, the other one was C.J. McCollum. I mean, the Bulls get lucky again. This crazy streak of their opponents being without their key players. No Damian Lillard. It was his fifth consecutive game missed due to injury. But McCollum, who's kind of like the lesser known, lesser appreciated of that 1-2 punch in Portland, just went nuts. 32 points, 11. He took 30 shots, 11 of 30 from the field. Dished out 8 assists, grabbed 6 boards, was vital to Portland staying in this game and eventually winning it down the stretch. Answered Lauri Markkanen's big bucket with one of his own and then iced it with 2 free throws in overtime. I mean, everybody talks about Lillard being the number one star of this team, obviously. But McCollum's performance was absolutely worthy of calling it an all-star, even superstar-level kind of performance. And Nurkic was the wild factor, the X factor that the Bulls just couldn't handle.
Yeah, I looked at him especially in the second half. I looked at Al-Farouq Aminu, who drilled, I think, 3 of his 5 three-pointers in that fourth quarter, and I'm pretty sure he did it on back-to-back shots too late within the last 5 minutes of the game. The Bulls had struggled to cover him from 3, and the Trailblazers were kind of playing off the mentality of the Bulls. What they were used to doing and what they can take advantage of is using Nico and using Bobby and also using Lauri Markkanen to kind of spread things out and be able to give them those shots from beyond the arc. The Bulls didn't shoot bad from beyond the arc. They shot over 40% in this game, but they allowed the Trailblazers to do just the same. They shot 42.4% from the field. The one thing that frustrated me most about this Trailblazers game, besides what Nurkic was getting away with, which I thought was brutal, and like even if you go back and look at the tape, just go back and look at the last 7 minutes of that fourth quarter and even into overtime, there was a part during a timeout where Bobby Portis kind of bumped Yusuf Nurkic as they were separating for timeouts. And I looked at that and I don't know why, but the refs were letting him get away with everything. It seemed like he was pushing off guys. He was setting moving screens all over the place. They were letting him get away with things that I don't think normally happens, but we saw some odd officiating in this game as well. The other thing that frustrated me too, in terms of whether or not the Bulls need to win this, are truly trying to win games or not. And that's kind of the confusion that fans are here for over the last, I don't know, I would even say over the last month, is whether or not this team should be winning games or not. Well, in terms of Fred Hoiberg, if you're trying to win games, why was Nico Mirotic not on the floor? And I know Fred Hoiberg answered this after the game because of matchups, but I can't take that as a reason to completely say, all right, that's all right. That's totally fine. You wanted matchups. Because let's be honest, if you're trying to win this game, Nico Mirotic and Bobby Portis have been two of your hottest players on this team over the last couple of weeks. So why was he not on the floor? Why didn't he see any time after that 7-minute marker in the fourth quarter and even into overtime? But Nico Mirotic wasn't found at all on the floor. I was just really surprised at Fred Hoiberg's decision making there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is surprising too. And you know, I mentioned that Hoiberg gave his reasoning. As you said, it was matchups. It was trying to contain Yusuf Nurkic and needing Robin Lopez in there to do that, and you know, trying to go big. But you know, at the same time, you know, Felicio didn't play a single minute in this game. Another DNP for him. It's Nico and Bobby both have strengths and weaknesses on the defensive end, but neither of them can handle what Yusuf Nurkic was doing. And you mentioned that some of it was maybe borderline, you know, setting illegal screens and things like that, and maybe he got away with some stuff. But as far as, do you think maybe if Fred Hoiberg is trying to win this game, why is Nico not in there? I think that's a crazy conspiracy theory thing. I mean, yes, of course Fred Hoiberg was trying to win this game. I don't think he was slyly trying to cough this one up, because this is something that he and Paxton have addressed in recent weeks during this winning streak that has fans panicking about the tank, you know, going backwards or going in the wrong direction as these wins were stacking up. And, you know, Paxton said, obviously, we were banking on a high draft pick in 2018, but we want to see young player development, and we're seeing that in this winning streak. And we're also seeing coaching development, making, you know, Fred Hoiberg making strides, improving the technique and talent of these young kids, improving on closing out close games. Some of that credit has to go to Fred. And Fred Hoiberg himself has said, look, like, of course I'm trying to win these games. No head coach in the NBA is coming into a season, coming into a game on any given night saying, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to put a group of five guys on the floor that are going to lose the game for me. Of course not. Like, overall, big picture, yeah, the Bulls were expected to be a losing team this year so that they could add a elite-level, lottery-level, potential star player in the 2018 draft. That's part of the roadmap. But that doesn't mean that Fred Hoiberg's trying to lose games. Of course he's trying to win games.
Sunday night, or Sunday afternoon, I should say, against the Wizards and then against the Trailblazers, we saw two games in which the Bulls made a couple boneheaded moves, especially in the last 30 seconds of these games, one coming in overtime against the Trailblazers and then the other coming against the Wizards in regulation. The one thing that I had a problem with was two separate occasions. So against the Wizards, in the last 15 seconds, Bradley Beal's at the line. The Bulls are down two. Bradley Beal misses both free throws, and somehow, some way, the Bulls allow the Wizards to get the offensive rebound and basically not the game. That I had a problem with. There is no way a Bulls team should be allowing the Wizards to get an offensive rebound with 15 seconds left, down one possession, and you have no idea how to box out. You've got to make sure that your guys are boxing out. And I thought that was kind of a boneheaded play. It's something that I think Fred Hoiberg could have instructed to his players. And it's also something that the guys on the floor in the last 15 seconds to the game, you should know that. You should know that you need to box out, call a timeout at that point. They didn't do that. They ended up losing to the Wizards. The other thing I had, and this irritated me far and above the Wizards game, was in the Trailblazers game at the end of that game where Chris Dunn took that. It wasn't the greatest look, and I'll be honest, it wasn't the greatest look. Chris Dunn shouldn't have taken that shot. I think he got nervous, and he tried to do a little bit too much. But the fact that they had 12 seconds left on the clock, they were still only down one possession. Chris Dunn is complaining about a foul call. Lauri Markkanen, Denzel Valentine, and Justin Holiday are all fading back to play defense, and nobody's going to foul. You've got to foul in that last 10 seconds. They wasted 7 seconds before finally Robin Lopez was able to foul, and at that point, it did them no good, and they were in the Trailblazers hit their two free throws, and that was basically game over. So I was frustrated on that last play that nobody came to the ball and realized, okay, even though Chris Dunn missed that shot, nobody came to the ball to make that foul to try and to extend this game. And for a lot of reasons, I think that was a coaching flaw there, and it was also guys on the floor not understanding the situation that they were in. Because you look at it, Lauri Markkanen, Justin Holiday, Denzel Valentine, why are you guys fading back with 10 seconds left? You're down one possession. You all should be attacking the ball and trying to go for that foul. And the fact that you wasted 7 seconds and gave yourself only 3 seconds, and then the Trailblazers had two more free throws to shoot, you were pretty much game over at that point. So I was frustrated with the way both the Wizards and the Trailblazers games ended on back-to-back nights.
Yeah, you mentioned the end of the Wizards game, and it was very frustrating, and it definitely seemed like some bad mental mistakes, bad basketball, bad execution late in a close game. And that is coaching. You know, it's a reflection of coaching, and it's also a reflection of the young, inexperienced players on this Bulls roster right now that are being asked to play those crunch time minutes. And, you know, we saw it was kind of like a crazy pendulum swing from that 10-game losing streak in November and December, and then the crazy 7-game winning streak and, you know, winning 10 of 12 or whatever it was before dropping these last couple of games over the weekend, where all of a sudden the Bulls were winning those close games and executing and finishing down the stretch of close games. And it was the young, inexperienced kids. Chris Dunn making big plays late. Lauri Markkanen making big plays late. So, I mean, it's unfortunate that the game against Washington ended that way with what looked to be just bad mental mistakes. And you say, okay, well, this is a growing young team. Fred Hoiberg is still learning. He should have known, and he should have communicated during a timeout leading up to that situation, this is what's happening. If this, then this. Here's when you should foul. Here's what you should, you know, if we're in this situation, then don't foul, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe Fred Hoiberg did communicate all of those instructions to his players during a late timeout in the fourth, and maybe they didn't execute. Or maybe Fred Hoiberg did not communicate those things. But as a fan watching, you're right, Jordan. It's the head-scratching, head-pounding things that frustrate you to say, look, you know, I played basketball in grade school, junior high, maybe a little bit of high school. Hey, maybe I even played some rec league basketball in college. And I know not to make those mistakes late in the game. It's simple. It's simple, and it's frustrating when professionals who are paid good money make those dumb mistakes. But hey, it's part of the learning process of a young team.
Yeah, and I think to credit Fred Hoiberg and Randy Brown, even they were halfway on the court at that point during those last 10 seconds where Chris Dunn missed that shot, and you see Randy Brown's like trying to make the foul for them for the Bulls. Like Randy Brown was trying to check into the game and make that foul in the last 10 seconds, and Fred Hoiberg was all the way on the court too at that point, screaming at anybody to foul. So I think it was just a lapse of judgment from the guys that were on the court, and to that credit, really the only person that knew what to do in those last 10 seconds when Chris Dunn missed that shot was your veteran in Robin Lopez. And at that point, Robin Lopez was halfway across, you know, he was on the opposite side of the baseline where the ball was. By the time he got over there, he lost 7 seconds when they realized what they were doing. So I think it's, like you said, it's a learning process. It's guys needing to pay attention more to what's going on and being locked into the situation that they're in. Rather than complaining about calls, worrying about what happened 2 possessions ago, worrying about what happened 2 minutes ago in the game, any of that, and that was another thing is, you know, as much credit as I've given Chris Dunn, and we all have given Chris Dunn, and I'm floored with Chris Dunn, the way he has developed, especially over the last, what, month, 6 weeks, and seeing all the positive things he did, the one thing I did not like from him was the fact that he took that shot, and then instead of going in, playing into that next possession, even though he missed that shot, he was complaining and looking for a foul call, and at that point in the game, it's so crucial, you're down only one possession, you can't think about anything like that. And I think that's just going to come from, it's going to come from experience. And when the Bulls are in these situations, which it's kind of crazy that the Bulls have been in these sort of needing to lock up these games in the fourth quarter, playing as many close games as they have, I think it's just going to be a learning experience from guys. And also, I looked at what Chris Dunn did too. 8 turnovers against the Trailblazers, not a good look, not especially a good look from him. Although he did, he went 9 for 20 from the field. He shot pretty well. He had 22 points. For the most part, he played well, but those 8 turnovers loom large, and that last shot down the stretch in overtime was not very good either.
Yeah, and look, I think it's unfortunate that we had another one of those games where you look at Chris Dunn's number in the turnover column of his box score, and you say, yikes. Turn the ball over 8 times. That's not what you want from your starting point guard. But, you know, it was it's now slowly shifting towards those high turnover numbers being a bad night as opposed to a normal night. You know, when Dunn was earlier this season, first coming off the bench and then in the early days of him being a starter, it was kind of like every other night you had a good Chris Dunn night as far as his assist-to-turnover ratio, and then a bad one. It was like 50-50. Now we're seeing more and more, and you can see the trend of his assist-to-turnover ratio as the season's progressed. Now it's becoming, he's looking to get teammates involved. He's still dishing out a fair amount of assists every night, and more often than not, he keeps the turnovers down. And as really a guy who, for all intents and purposes, is a rookie this year as far as being a starter in the NBA, you're going to have bad nights like that where you make careless mistakes. And to your point about his lack of mental awareness in the late game situation against Washington, and then his struggles down the stretch and in overtime against Portland, yeah, it's rough. It's frustrating to see your rookie point guard, or I guess technically second year point guard, go through that. But the more we see from Dunn, the more you see the upside and the potential upside, and the ceiling seems to be growing higher and higher. And you're going to have bad nights where he turns the ball over a bunch. But, you know, as far as the mental mistakes, the ones that you highlighted from this weekend, even the best players in the league make those mistakes. The complaining to a ref instead of getting your head back in the game and getting back on defense, I mean, come on. LeBron James does that still at age 32 or 33. Steph Curry does that. James Harden does that. All of the big stars in the league at some point or another make those mistakes where, hey, I thought I got fouled and I'm going to go yell at this ref instead of getting back on defense. Everybody does that. So I'm going to give Chris Dunn a pass for doing that as a second-year player.
I like the fact that you brought it up, too, that it's Chris Dunn, instead of Chris Dunn being a normal night where he's turning the ball over 4, 6, I mean, in this game, 8 times. I think that's important. I think what you said there is important, that it's no longer a norm for Chris Dunn to turn the ball over that many times. And I think we've seen this that development in December too. I'm just looking at his game logs in December. He only turned the ball over four more times in a game in four of those games. One coming against Indiana early on in December, one coming against the Milwaukee Bucks, one coming against Cleveland, and the other coming against Philadelphia. Other than that, he was under four turnovers a night, and for most of those stretches, he was turning the ball over once or twice in a game. So I think I'm on board with you when you say that, you know, it's turning into nights where it could be a bad night controlling the ball rather than just being a norm for Chris Dunn. The other thing I have to talk about too is the officiating overall. It's funny that you said that the complaining that has gone with the officiating too. We've seen it across the league with guys like James Harden, who's even been vocal after games over the last 2 weeks. I mean, we talked about it on Christmas Day. There was against the Rockets and the Celtics game. He got called for back-to-back offensive fouls in the last 5 seconds of a game in a one-possession game. And for that to be called that late in the game, I mean, there's some questionable calls there. I mean, LeBron's even come out and talked about it in the last 2 or 3 weeks. We know how LeBron talks about it in the media with the officiating and not getting calls, blah, blah, blah. But the fact that there is kind of this offset of officiating, and we've seen it even across just outside of Bulls games, I think there's been some frustration and understanding what calls are going to get made, what calls are not getting made, and certain players are getting things that other players aren't. It's a norm in the NBA, but I think it goes beyond just Chris Dunn and it goes beyond just the Bulls. But looking across the league, hasn't been particularly a good 2 or 3 week stretch for the officiating across the league. If you've watched all these games, you've kind of listened to some other players from other teams. It hasn't been that great. And I mean, maybe we're hitting that wall in the NBA where we're getting, you know, not so great, not A+ officiating from all these. And, you know, hey, they're going to make mistakes too. But at the same time, it's kind of frustrating when I see a guy like Yusuf Nurkic just basically be able to plow guys over. Like there was one time it looked like Robin Lopez was in a headlock by Yusuf Nurkic in this game. And so I think that's just frustrating. And it's got to be frustrating for the players on the floor too when they can't do anything about it.
I mean, I've always been frustrated by NBA officiating. And as a sports fan in general, you hate it when the officiating plays a bigger part than it should in games that are close. And as a fan, you really especially hate it when the referees play a bigger part than they should in a game that is close that your team loses, right? I mean, there's nothing more frustrating than that. To say, we played well, we had a chance to win, we probably should have won if a very important call went another way and seemed like general consensus, it should have gone the other way. The thing that bothers me about the NBA is the whole last 2 minute report thing, right? Because in other leagues now, you know, the NFL, NHL, MLB, the other four major sports in this country, you have the coach's challenge or the manager's challenge in a variety of different ways. You can say, hey, I don't think you guys got that right. Please go back and look at it. That still doesn't exist in the NBA. Officials will go back and look at the replay to try to get a call right when determining, hey, you know, should this be a flagrant foul? What level of flagrant foul? You know, who on which player on which team touched the ball last to determine possession, side, out of bounds, and that should exist. But for these last 2 minute reports to come out after the fact and say, yeah, actually the refs missed a traveling call here, or the refs missed a foul here, and if it's the team on the losing side in a close game that got boned by those mistake calls, like, what is the point other than just upsetting NBA fans watching these games to say, yeah, we got that wrong? I mean, is there something else happening on, you know, on the back end of this to say, all right, well, if there is a trend of certain officials or certain crew of officials getting more and more of these calls wrong late in crunch time, you know, do they miss out on big games? Do they get scheduled less frequently? There should be some repercussion other than to just say, hey, here's the last 2 minute report. Here are a few calls that the refs got wrong in the final seconds of an important game. Sorry. Like, how frustrating is that? It's insane.
Yeah. And I think I go back and point to that, like I was talking about that Rockets Celtics game where Marcus Smart literally flopped two consecutive times in the last 10 seconds. And got an offensive foul called on James Harden on back-to-back plays, and that ended up costing the Rockets that game. And while you can talk about the Rockets blowing a 26-point lead, sure, you can talk about that, but specifically looking at those calls, like if you look at any other game around the league or if you look at any normal regular season game, and if James Harden wasn't a part of that play, and if it wasn't in Boston, I have a feeling that those would not be called 95% of the time. Those offensive fouls back-to-back, and I understand that they called them back-to-back on that because he made the call before previously like that. Okay, you want to be consistent, fine. But to make that a point and to make that part of the game where it literally changes the outcome or basically gives a hand to the Celtics and says, hey, here you go. Basically, James Harden blew it by having two offensive fouls called him on consistent on out of bounds plays too, which was even crazier. So I'm with you, I think, on the fact that if it's not going to be called in a regular game, and just because the heightened expectations are there because it's a Celtics-Rockets game, because it's two of the best teams in the league playing, or because it's a star player and you're calling something against them, just all those little factors, I think it's got to be more consistent here. And like you were talking about, is there repercussions for officials in the NBA when they do start making bad calls, or is there a way where, you know, players have to obviously have to develop in the NBA, but so should your officiating crew be able to develop during games. So I think there just needs to be more of a consistent factor with the way games are called. And I think it would be increasingly frustrated if I was a Rockets fan watching that on Christmas Day and seeing your star player who should be getting calls being called for back-to-back offensive fouls on inbound plays that ended up costing you a game in Boston. I think for me, that would be the most frustrating thing. It was frustrating as an NBA fan too, because I don't want to see that end the game. Like, I don't want the outcome of a game be in the hands of the officials, and you don't want that across the league. And you see the problem is even more so bad in the MLB. It's becoming an ever so problem in the NFL. So you see it around the league too. But as the game gets faster, as the game gets more ticky tacky, I feel like with rules and officiating, it gets harder for human officials to do things like that. But at the same time, I don't want the outcome of a game to be lying in the hands of the officials, especially in the last 2 minutes of a game.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate element of the game, and I think for the most part, I mean, you mentioned this specific example of Houston and Boston and James Harden being, you know, right now a leading contender for MVP, and whether or not those star players should get those calls, whether they're at home or on the road. For the most part, that's how it is going to work. The NBA superstar-level players that make the league their most money, they get calls. So from a Bulls fan perspective, if there have been a few games here or there this season where you think, hey, we kind of got the raw end of the deal and, you know, late in a close game, Chris Dunn, you know, drove and didn't get a call, or Denzel Valentine got hacked and didn't get a call when he was going up for a shot, that's going to happen because, you know, despite everything that LeBron James may have to say about not being officiated fairly, oh, I'm so big and strong that I get fouled all the time and don't get called for it. Whatever. He also gets special treatment. He gets away with a travel every other game. He gets away with multiple travels every other game. For the most part, stars will get the star treatment. And the Bulls have no stars. So the Bulls will not get any star treatment from the officials this year. And that's just, you know, that's how it works. It's unfortunate, but that's how it works.
And I feel like I'm okay with that. As long as it's consistent across the league, you know? If Giannis is getting a call in Milwaukee, if he's getting multiple calls, if James Harden's okay, if he's getting calls, if Steph Curry's getting calls, if LeBron James is getting calls, that's fine. As long as it's consistent across the league and there isn't favoritism in terms of what star players are getting calls, what star players aren't, what the preferential treatment is. And I think that comes with NBA crews, too, in general. And I think it's the mindset of the officials, too, in whether or not they're more willing to give those calls or not. So I think more consistency across the league is probably going to benefit everybody. And for Bulls fans who, like you had said, there isn't really a star on this team right now, but that could change in 2, 3, 4 years. There could be a star back here in Chicago. And when we did have Jimmy Butler last year, in the last few years, Jimmy Butler was getting calls. He wasn't getting a ton of calls because I don't know if he was at that superstar plethora that maybe officials hold some other guys to.
Oh, but he definitely got calls. If he went ISO late in games when the game was on the line, and he got touched. He drew fouls. Jimmy Butler went to the free throw line a lot last season.
So I think that's going to be something to monitor too. And I'd like to kind of take a look at that and see, especially late in games, if the Bulls are driving to the basket and or they're getting hacked and they're not getting some of these calls, that might bring up a little bit more of a concern.
So speaking of across the league, before we get out of here, Jordan and I just wanted to do a little bit of our usual Monday segment, which is looking across the NBA for any noteworthy storylines, trending teams, trending players. And as we're sitting here recording this on Tuesday, the big story, the return of Isaiah Thomas in Cleveland. The first action he will see since that huge trade that basically shook up the two powerhouses in the Eastern Conference this summer. Isaiah Thomas going to Cleveland, Kyrie after that trade demand going to Boston. So, I mean, to me, Jordan, this is really, you know, this might be something that determines who comes out of the East this year. I still think it's Cleveland, regardless of how well Boston's playing right now. I'm sorry, for the last umpteen years, when it comes to determining who represents the East in the finals, I take the team that has LeBron James on it because that's how it works. But I mean, I might go even further into, you know, if I were a betting man, I'll take Cleveland based on what we see from Isaiah Thomas. Because, you know, this hip injury that knocked him out of the playoffs last year, it kind of came out of nowhere and became more serious than they originally let on and more serious than people thought. And you look at what the Cavs have had at the point guard position thus far this season, Derrick Rose for just 7 games and largely inefficient, and an ancient Jose Calderon. You replace either of those guys with a close to 100% Isaiah Thomas, who, I mean, emerged as an MVP candidate for Boston last year, led them in a huge turnaround. I mean, scoring points at will for an undersized guard. This could be a thing that allows Cleveland to just run away with the East if we get the Isaiah Thomas we saw last season.
Yeah, I'm excited to see him come back and play for Cleveland, not only just for to see what he can do after that injury and see how well he comes back and performs, but also it's the sub storyline here. It's the fact that Danny Ainge traded Isaiah Thomas after going out there and playing after his sister passed away in the playoffs. And this is relevant to the Bulls, too. This was right during that series, that opening series in the playoffs where the Celtics were playing the Bulls. Weren't sure if Isaiah Thomas was going to come back after his sister was tragically killed in a car accident. And Isaiah Thomas said this in multiple interviews. I don't know if you caught him on ESPN or not. There was a one-on-one with him, and it kind of broke down the story of when he realized he was getting traded from Boston, kind of the backstabbing that he felt from Danny Ainge and from the Celtics organization for just getting rid of him. And I felt for Isaiah Thomas in that point, too, because he even said it. I came back when I probably shouldn't have. And if, in hindsight, if I knew that the Celtics were going to trade me and part of the reason was because I was hurt and they weren't sure about my future, I wouldn't have played in those playoff games. I wouldn't have done it. And I think that's part of it, too, is you look at professional leagues, it's unforgiving. And he even talks about it. He said, I don't have any plans to talk to Danny Ainge. I probably won't ever talk to him again. He said maybe down the line 20, 25 years from now, maybe we'll have a conversation. But right now I haven't talked to him and I don't plan on talking to him. And I feel like that's a pretty big storyline to have to pick your family up and move it from Boston to Cleveland after everything that you gave Boston fans and everything he gave Danny Ainge, plus coming back in the playoffs and having to play hurt and then having to come back after that mental stress and all the emotions that came around him after his sister had passed away. I think it was kind of rude. It was kind of heartless in terms of Danny Ainge's point, but it's also a business, so I get it. But that's going to be a storyline I really want to watch, because especially in the playoffs, if the Celtics and the Cavaliers meet in the playoffs, it's going to create one hell of an NBA storyline.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at this point assuming and, you know, crossing fingers and hoping that we get Cavs-Celtics in the conference finals. I mean, like, who doesn't want to see that? I know that Toronto has quietly, you know, played very well thus far this season, and they're actually in the 2 seed in the East right now. But they always disappoint in the playoffs, and they're never really all that much fun to watch as a playoff team. Cleveland-Boston in the conference finals has got to be what everybody wants to see. And then even before we get to the playoffs in the regular season, from an X's and O's standpoint, I mean, as of right now, Cleveland at just over 110 is averaging the fifth highest scoring points per game in the league. And their defense, which started the season off terribly, has made a nice little comeback. They're currently allowing 107.3, 23rd in the league. So what kind of positive and negative net effect will Isaiah Thomas have being inserted into this rotation? I mean, obviously, you hope that he can still be the dominant offensive force he was for Boston last year, but he's also a weakness on the defensive end, and you have to try to, you know, hide his weaknesses from a coaching and schematics and matchup standpoint. So what can Ty Lue do about that? And as far as usage percentage, you know, what will Isaiah Thomas's return have on LeBron James and the heavy minutes he's been playing this season at age 33? What will his usage percentage and his presence have on Kevin Love, who has had a very strong season thus far, being the number two guy in Cleveland after Kyrie's departure? So a lot of interesting factors that the reinsertion of Isaiah Thomas and the introduction of Isaiah Thomas into this Cleveland Cavs team, it's going to be really fascinating to watch, and I hope that it ends up being Kyrie versus his old team, Isaiah Thomas versus his old team in the conference finals. And it'll be fun watching it make its way there, because it's just going to be an increasingly interesting storyline with a lot of different subplots to it.
Real quick, did you see Anthony Davis absolutely destroy Ron Baker this weekend?
Oh my God. I mean, like, I've always worried about Anthony Davis's long-term durability, just because he's already battled so many different injuries in his young NBA career. But when that guy decides that he wants to take over a game, holy crap.
Yeah, I hope he stays healthy too for the duration, so we can fully get the experience of Anthony Davis. I know we all, you know, when he is healthy and when he is playing, he's one of the top 10. He's one of the top 10 easiest, best players in the NBA. And he showed it. I mean, credit to Ron Baker for trying to challenge Anthony Davis, but maybe now in the future he'll understand that maybe I'll just watch Anthony Davis throw that dunk down instead of trying to block him, and then end up having to get three stitches under his eye and being kind of the laughingstock of NBA Twitter over the last couple of days. But damn, is Anthony Davis good when he's healthy.
Yeah. Then that's, you know, obviously we're getting closer to the trade deadline. February 8th, so just a little over a month away. For the Bulls, that means keeping an eye on Robin Lopez and Nico Mirotic. But for other there are a lot of teams out there, including, you know, there are rumors about the Boston Celtics being a team that would love to add Anthony Davis. But, you know, they've been getting some great minutes from their main big, Al Horford, this season. So Anthony Davis, certainly a name to watch.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, you can follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. If you have the time and you like what we're doing here on the show, please go give us a review, 5-star review on iTunes or anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Go ahead and give us a review. Give us some feedback. We'd love to see that heading into the new year. We've gotten some positive feedback and some great feedback on Twitter. Our email is at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. If you want to write some stuff in, how you're feeling about the Chicago Bulls, you don't necessarily like using Facebook or Twitter, email us. We check our email all the time, so lockedonbulls@gmail.com. We love to hear from you. We love to respond to fan mail too as well. And just some of your thoughts too. If you've got thoughts or things you want us to bring up here on the show, go ahead and send it to us on social media or email. But for Jordan and Matt, we will be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. Stay warm, and hopefully you have a great day in Chicago.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.